You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery. National speaker Timmery Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember, helping Gen X through Z answer the call to true feminism and authentic manhood. Chris Mueller is a national speaker, author, father of six, and is currently making a Catholic TV show for families as he travels speaking to over 10,000 people each year. Between Chris having over 18 years experience in Catholic lay ministry and Timmery's holding a master's degree in biblical theology, together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
So the other day, I'm out with my kids, and we're driving along, and we see the weirdest thing. There's two guys with goats on leashes, which is not a normal sight. And so it's interesting. I live in California, and California is the home of insanity, really. So people are walking their goats.
I thought it was the fruits and nuts.
Well, that's us, you know, anyway. But my daughter, and she makes this joke. She goes, "Well, Dad, this is California. That goat can be whatever it wants to be." And I thought, oh, you're so clever. And it's so sad that my daughter's making trans species jokes now, because that's normal in California, trans everything.
Well, you know, I've gotten tired of the trans jokes, and I get that they're funny, but man, I would love to go one day without a trans joke either popping into my head or being said by someone else, because they're everywhere right now.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely. It's so weird, too, because it's just come on like this tidal wave out of nowhere. It was something that was not even on the radar like 5 years ago.
Right.
And now it is just everywhere.
Thanks, Bruce Jenner.
Yeah, I guess so.
But he's still attracted to women, just to be clear. He's still attracted to women, very attracted to women.
It's like that couple that gave birth, and is a man gives birth to child and with his partner, and I'm like, but it's a woman. It was a woman who gave birth.
And it is a woman.
It's a woman who gave birth because she was married to a man, and they had normal, you know, conjugal relations. And they conceived a child, and yet the news is talking about it, saying a man gave birth. And you're like, there was nothing that was a man about the giving of the birth. My brain wants to explode.
One that was killing me was at the mall. Every time I go, I don't even like shopping. If you know me, I hate shopping. I just do not enjoy it.
I get in, get out. I like to peruse.
I'm not a fan, but there's this. So when I go, I'm like on a mission. I'm heading in and I'm going into the mall. And for 2 years, there was this store that had men's clothes, but had a mannequin with a pregnant woman's body with a man shirt over the top of it. And for years, it's like they're just sitting there trying to make a point that, well, men can get pregnant too, except for that's not possible. And you're just super pro gender ideology. And it's an ideology. It's not truth. And it would just make me so mad every time I saw this girl dressed up as a boy, but trying to pretend like it's men's
clothes. Now, see, I've seen a pregnant lady wearing a man's shirt, because towards the end of pregnancy, my wife was so frustrated not being able to find anything. She just grabs it on my t-shirts. And she would wear it for like a half an hour and be like, I hate this. And then she'd try to find something of her own again. But yeah, I mean, maybe that's what's going on with that mannequin. It was just done. It was ready to give birth. It's going to wear whatever she can put on.
It was like, I am actually a woman. I will admit it now. You can see. Yeah. You know, one of the things that stands out when you're saying that, so here are these two men walking down the street with a goat. Well, one of the things that you're seeing very common because we're in Orange County right now broadcasting, but where I live in San Diego, I've had a number of friends who have shared with me when they are in the maternity ward, they've given birth to their kids, and they're going to visit the baby. Maybe the baby has some health issues. Here are all the preemies with health issues, and you're looking through the glass at them. There are all these French homosexual couples standing looking in at the babies. And what they came to realize is that San Diego is a hub for surrogacy, and a lot of people coming from overseas, especially France, to adopt children here in San Diego.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah, and so I had a number of friends who have been in the preemie maternity ward working through the struggles. And what's interesting is that it's very common for children who are conceived, if we want to call it that, but created in a petri dish, essentially, via IV and then insert into a surrogate woman, that these babies often have premature issues. They end up being born premature quite often. And so you'll see a lot of those couples hanging out there in the San Diego hospitals.
Wow. I just that would be such a weird place. You're like, where's a baby? And like, ha, ha, ha. I have no idea. I just had so many French jokes running through my mind right now. But that's really weird.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We've hit this whole new point where people would like to call it the new normal, but the reality is it's not normal. These are still extreme and rare circumstances. I think here in California, we see it a little more often, but media would like us to perceive that this is the new normal.
Right, and it's wonderful, right? That's the media's take. It's new normal. It's wonderful. Isn't this progressive? It's like this, oh, well, they have this love, and now they deserve to have a child, right? Mm-hmm. And I just kind of go like, well, gosh, like we've changed children now to a gift from God to it's mine, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody deserves to have a child. It's your right to have a child if you want one, whether you're married or not married, whether you're two men who could not possibly conceive a child or two women who could not possibly conceive a child. You have a right to a child. And mm-hmm. What does that say about the value of that life, right? That it's an accessory at that point. It's just something to complete your little package, your little picture. And having kids, there's much more to children than, oh, we just want one. You're not buying a chihuahua.
The question is, are children a commodity to be sought after? Does in vitro fertilization impact women? Does it harm their bodies? And, you know, what's the important attitude that we have to have about family before we get to the point where no one has a family anymore? To be quite frank, I mean, we see in China, Japan, different places where the elderly are dying off with no one to even realize that they're dead. And so there's a whole new business where people are coming in to clean up after a person's deceased and been deceased for a number of days and weeks, sometimes within their home.
Oh man, I once showed a condo where someone had passed and had apparently been there for a while.
Oh.
We weren't in that condo long. It was not.
Did it smell?
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
It was not good.
Yeah.
That we did.
Not.
My clients did not buy that.
I would presume not.
There you go. They cut a big piece of carpet out. It was pretty. It was gross. Anyway, sorry.
There's something creepy though. Sometimes
I don't want that to be normal. I'll put it that way. Yeah. I don't want that to be the normal thing.
Yeah.
Now.
You don't want to have to sell stinky apartments and
I
homes.
I just don't want people dying in their homes and not being found for days.
Yeah.
You know, that should not be normal. People should have, the older people should have family in their lives. They should have kids or grandkids or nephews or nieces or people who love them. They shouldn't, we shouldn't have this disposable elderly.
Right. I mean, this is the harm that happens. You know, it's hard even seen within my own family. You know, we talked about this starting with, you know, same-sex couples here in Southern California coming to the hospital as well. I have family members who, you know, much older, didn't have children, and who are sicker now and had lived a same-sex lifestyle for a long period of time. Well, they're the ones where the family's kind of trying to figure out how to take care of them, right? And, you know, there's this responsibility to love and care for them, but also, you know, we also have our own parents and our own other sick and ailing, stroked family members. And, you know, it makes it challenging. And it breaks my heart personally to see family members I love dearly who are now having to go and be placed in that retirement home. And we're trying to figure out how to see them.
Yeah. You know, it's as a father of six children, there's a certain peace that I know I'm never going to be alone because I've got six kids who hopefully will then have children. Right. Does that make sense?
Right.
And like, and so I look at my family, I'm one of seven. And my siblings have all had children and we get together for family gatherings. There's always someone. And if there's an emergency, you know, in our local area, there's always someone who can get there because there's just, we're a mighty nation unto ourselves. You know what I mean? Like there's just so many of us and that's, I love that.
Well, so then here's the argument. We're going to be talking a lot about in vitro fertilization today, but then there are a lot of people who cannot have children, who would love to have children. Maybe you are sitting there listening right now, friends, and you are struggling with an infertility crisis right now, and you would love to have a baby, but you know the church says no to in vitro fertilization. We're going to be talking a little bit about why, the impact on the woman and the children. But here we are talking about families in this multi-generation of families, but it's a legitimate issue in today's day and world that whether from having delayed childbearing, infertile reasons for no other really understanding, we can't figure out why that is, or maybe it's years of hormonal contraception use, I don't know. There are people who aren't going to have that option of children now. And so where do we answer that question?
Right. Is there, do you then have a right to a child?
You know, and the church often talks about, you know, the one of the primary goods of marriage, one of the ends of marriage is having children, right? Getting your spouse to heaven and having children, the procreation, education of those children. And the catechism talks about how if you cannot have children, you are called, you could adopt, or you're called to rigorous service towards others. And it actually talks about, you know, really intense service towards people. It's not like, oh, I'm just going to enjoy being an accountant. No, you're called to serve.
Yeah, do we want to get into IVF right now? I mean, I feel like we've danced around it, but there are people listening right now, and I've talked to people. There was a guy at the gym I talked to a while back, and he was telling me about how excited they were. They were finally going to have this in vitro fertilization. They're doing it again. They have so many chances. I think there's a lot of Catholics out there who just don't have any clue why the church doesn't say it's okay, right? Or what's the problem?
Right. Well, we can start with the very first thing with in vitro fertilization. In vitro fertilization, when they go about it, and this is the first piece I think that helps us begin to walk down this, and it's not the only thing. When people end up having, let's say they can't get pregnant, right? They then use sperm and an egg in a petri dish to create a new human person, an embryo, a baby in the earliest stages of life. They then have, what happens is, not just one embryo, but they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 10. This is how we got Octomom, right?
Right.
They then have a number of fertilized eggs, new distinct human life. Well, they have an option. They could freeze some of those eggs, or they can implant those eggs. Well, embryos, right? Fertilized new human life. They could implant them. Well, let's say they go, well, let's implant three, because it doesn't make sense to just implant one, because we'd have to go through the process again. Well, what happens is some of those babies might die off because they're weaker. They're not as strong.
It's sort of a storming the beach at Normandy mindset.
Yes.
Right? They're going to just put a bunch in there. We'll see who makes it.
Exactly. So let's say three are implanted, one baby dies, two live. Well, then they have, you're pregnant with twins. Well, what happens is that person only wanted a little boy, so they abort the other baby.
Right, you sex selective abortion.
We're going to come back with more of this on in vitro fertilization to really help you understand why the church says no to IVF. We'll be right back. Check us out on Twitter in the meantime, and we will talk to you on the other side.
Chris and Timmery will be right back. Tweet them at CMuellerTweets, spelled MUELLER, and at Timmery. That's TIMMERIE. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
So in vitro fertilization is difficult. I get it. And that's why before we came into that break, we kind of needed to break down some of that. So the number one issue with IVF is that we are selectively choosing to potentially abort some of the babies that are implanted into the mother's womb, and some of them may die off.
Right. And so that's something you need to understand. When you're going for IVF, they don't spend all the time, all the money to just do one egg, one person, right? Mm-hmm. It's a bunch, right? And how many are we talking? Like 30? Like, I don't know what the numbers are.
You commonly see 5, 6, 7, 10. They might end up having 12 babies, and they freeze, let's say, 8 of those embryos, and 4 of them they then try to implant.
So essentially, you essentially have a football team worth of children, right? And then they implant a number of them and freeze some, and then it's just to see who takes.
Right. And I mean, I have to say, some of you may be listening, you're like, that's incredible that can even be done. It is fascinating. It's incredible. It is one of those moments where you say, wow, science has really achieved a lot. However, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should.
Well, and then you look at your football team, right? Your family is there, and you have all of these children who are children now. These are fertilized eggs. These are people. These are babies in the very, very earliest stages of development.
Well, think what we know just real quick. What do we know about those babies?
They have their own DNA.
They've got their own genes.
Oh, yeah.
We know their hair color, characteristics about the person, the skin color. We know a lot just looking at the chromosomes and the DNA present.
Right. And so you have the implanted embryos, which you may end up with 8 viable, pregnancies, essentially, or you have the frozen embryos. Well, they're all human beings. They're all precious. They're all created in the image and likeness of God. What happens? And unfortunately, oftentimes you will see selective abortion.
Selective abortion. Not only selective abortion, but we're getting to the point where people are intentionally trying to create human life. Well, I really want that blonde baby with blue eyes. This is a thing, you guys. And I mean, just an example of this, at one of the local churches in San Diego, there are these two sisters that keep popping out kids, but they're not popping the kids out. They're going, we're going to go pick up your new baby brother and sister this weekend. And they tell the kids, we're going to go pick them up at the hospital. And it's this exciting thing. Well, well, the families are growing and they have huge families. Oh, these girls are excited because I don't have to go through pregnancy. I don't have to get out of shape with my body. And it's become this competition of who has more children and who's looking good being super mom.
Wait, so
to
they
this
just,
extent.
You're saying they're like surrogacy? They're just someone else is baby making for them?
Someone else is baby making for them.
Wow.
And so this is how deep it can get, you guys. So here are the different ways it can go.
There's like a celebrity lawsuit right now where there's some same-sex couple, and he was on this house flipping show or something, and they had a surrogate and they had the baby, and all of a sudden he's suing the baby factory woman. I mean, I hate to, but she's commoditized, right? The womb has been commoditized, and now there's this lawsuit. I mean, so this is legit. Like, this is a thing that's happening.
This was an issue with Sophia Vargas. This was an issue. We've been covering this on Trending, different stories, very high-profile stories. There are stories where even, imagine this, you guys. So there are different ways this could make up. Maybe you're a woman who can't get pregnant, right? And you try. So maybe you use your own eggs and your husband's, hopefully your husband's, not a partner, right? Your husband's sperm, you insert the sperm into the egg and hope that even though it's not in your stomach, right, that this might take off, and then they implant it. Well, maybe that still doesn't work. So you go another level further. You then use the egg of another woman and use the sperm of your husband. So that's no longer biologically the woman's child, but then you implant it in your womb. Or you could have two complete strangers and have a surrogate, or your husband's sperm and your egg in a surrogate. Like, there's so many different directions this whole conversation could go.
Right. And then you end up with a child on the other hand who has all of those questions of identity, of where am I from? You know, why do I look the way I look? Why don't I recognize myself in my parents' eyes? And those are real human questions, right? In the case of adoption, you say, well, because, you know, this, whatever circumstance happened, that we got you, and you're the most precious gift we've ever received. But in the case of IVF, I mean, you, because your dad wanted to make a little extra money, and so he went to the clinic on the weekend, and, or because of, you know, there's just the, you don't have those, that longing, that desire to know. In respects, it goes unanswered. What's the right of a child to know where they came from?
So we're going to talk right now about what that perspective is. Here's one example of what's happening, Chris. There is a young man who, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, who is the founder of the Ruth Institute, good friend, and she works a lot reaching out to the survivors of the sexual revolution. Maybe you're a career woman who wasn't able to have children when you wanted to. Maybe you experienced a divorce, or maybe you were a child of divorce. Maybe you had an abortion, or maybe you're someone who went through an in vitro fertilization, or are the child of the process of IVF. Well, she knows a young man who in this small town, it's not even that small, ended up finding that he kept running into people that looked like him.
Whoa.
Over and over again. And he was so disturbed, he ended up kind of reaching out and finding some information. And he came to discover that he likely has not just dozens, but hundreds of different half siblings, because one of his parents had been donating their sperm or egg for so long that now all these people were using it for in vitro fertilization. He had to move because it was unsettling how common he was finding it to recognize himself and other people.
Wow. That is, and we've heard stories like this, you know, of doctors who have done this, of, this is not an uncommon story. It's come up in the news before,
right,
where, you know, you'll find that sperm donors have like multiple children in a town or in a municipality.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is the thing too. You know, we're going to be talking later about how, well, who's being targeted to be a donor, right? And what's the impact on them? But we have to focus on the children, Chris. You know, children are growing up with the fact that, well, I have another mom out there. I have another father out there. It's different from adoption, where I know my mom or my dad couldn't raise me, and the best possible option was this stand-in couple, right, who are raising me, because they're trying to make the best possible circumstance here.
Right.
Versus in vitro fertilization, it's the flip side. It's the parents wanting a child and denying from their birth the right, denying that child the right to their biological mother and father.
Right. And again, our modern culture is going to say, well, it doesn't really matter, and not enough, you can overcome, and there's all these, you know, I think it's such a common thing in our society to take the marginal cases and try to use them as a rule, mm-hmm. right? And so they'll say things along the lines of, well, what about people whose spouse dies, right? Then, of course, then that person doesn't have a father in life because the father died. Does that mean they're like an illegitimate family? And the answer is no, it's a tragedy. But right. you never use tragedy as the hoped for.
Right.
Right? You never go, oh, well, gosh, it because because there are single mothers are out there, then you don't need both mom and dad. You got somebody who's making the best of a situation that was a tragedy in that situation.
Something is missing that should have been there, that was there.
Right, absolutely.
That's not the removal of that person. And we're today creating human beings, and in their creation, we're saying before they're even conceived, you will not have, you will never know your father. You will have no relationship with him. He has signed off any rights or any communication with you from before he has even conceived you.
Yeah, I just want to kind of just go back to the idea of the argument too, though, because I feel like as Catholics, we are so disarmed sometimes. And whether it's the abortion argument or IVF or you know, same-sex couples adopting children or whatever it is, we use these kind of outlier arguments, right? And we go, oh gosh, I don't want to be insensitive to single mothers, or I don't want to be insensitive to this, or I don't want to be insensitive to that. But we have to stop and say, no, guys, we don't use the outlier as the rule. You say, well, there's a situation that was terrible, and you try to make the best of that situation. I'm not saying that they're a bad person, their family is legitimate, or something wrong, but we're not going to say just because some people can make that work, that should be the norm.
So an example of that, working in the crisis pregnancy center, we would have a lot of women who ended up being single moms. And you'd see, you know, there would be the celebration of their high school graduation, and they have the 1 or 2 year old by their side and also a cap and gown. And people are going, oh, how cute. Well, we're celebrating the fact that in spite of everything that's happened, she still graduated and she had her baby. Does that mean we celebrate single motherhood? No, we celebrate that in these circumstances, she did the best she could.
We celebrate that. This came up in oral arguments when we were discussing the same-sex marriage question in the Supreme Court. I think it was Keegan who had said, well, you know, what about a couple who is infertile? Are they, you know, does that mean that they're not married, right? And the lawyers, I mean, it's just crazy that Supreme Court justices are making these arguments that are just to use the margins. I think there was some joke made about, well, she's past, you know, the childbearing age, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, but something that naturally worked has now run its course, right? We didn't break it on purpose, right? And that's, I just feel like as Catholics, we have to bring rational discussion and argument back into our culture. We can't always be lured out by the emotional argument. We have to stop and say, well, hold on a second.
You're saying you're going to deny the rights of a child. That's what you're saying. That at the heart of it, you're denying that child's right to a mother and a father. And here's the thing, Chris, you look at it. I think you and I have both grown up with friends who have been adopted. And I remember one of my dear friends who was adopted always longed to know who his mother really was. I remember at one point, even to the point of even thinking my mother was his mother because he loved my mother so much. And it would always break my heart because there was this longing, this search for a real biological connection. That while his adoptive mother loves him dearly and is his true mother, he still wanted to know, what is my origin? Where do I come from? Am I still loved by that person? And if not, why?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think we have to get out of this mindset that every person has a right to their perfect little picture. Mm-hmm. And we have to say that every person's created equal, but nobody's life is the same. And to say that it all has to be the same is to strip it of its dignity.
Well, and to just think about our timeline that we plan for life. Our timeline never goes according to plan. Well, sometimes having children doesn't go according to plan either. We'll be talking more about this from the woman's perspective.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery.
I have to put a full disclosure out here. When we're talking about in vitro fertilization, bioethics, some of the deepest, most complex topics of bioethics, it really makes my stomach turn. I remember when I was really young learning about the fact that we're creating babies outside of people. It just seems so inhumane. And I remember for days I was sad just thinking about this, that the fact that there are all these frozen babies that are frozen. And, you know, you think about human life in the smallest and most precious form, and in some ways it's almost even sadder, right?
Yeah.
And so the thing is that we talk about this, and we've been talking, if those of you who are just joining us, I'm going to really recommend that you go back and listen to this episode where we're breaking down the IVF argument. And we're just talking about it from the rights of the child, the perspective of the child and impact. But what about the perspective of the woman? What's happening is we are already living in a period of time when there's a huge number of people who are experiencing infertility. or maybe, you know, whether that's been a cause of a lifestyle that they've been living or uncaused, right? Unexpected surprise. The reality is that IVF at the end of the day is having its own impact on women, the actual process of it.
Yeah, absolutely. There's such a heartache with infertility. Mm-hmm. And I think that has to be acknowledged. It's a hard thing. You know, it's funny. I was just reflecting on the scriptures and the story of John the Baptist and Zechariah. And there's such a heartache of infertility. I think we have to understand and get that when people are dealing with that, they want answers, they want solutions. And we're living in a technological society where we think everything can and should be fixed. And, you know, IVF seems like it'd be such a great answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
But what we forget is the cost of it.
You know, there was a piece a few years ago when I was doing the show with my old co-host. We were on Hearts and Minds, and Trent Horn and I were talking about the impact on the woman. And there was this article that came out from Verily, and I'll be sure to tweet it out. It's by Susan Caldwell, and she talks about how her and her husband were struggling through infertility. Long story short, they're struggling. It ends up taking a huge hit on their marriage. Their marriage ends up suffering. She, in some ways, you know, kind of looks past the husband and just wants that baby that doesn't even exist. And it caused a lot of rift for them. So then they start the process of in vitro fertilization. And Chris, what's happening is heartbreaking. Her testimony is that, yes, I have two boys from IVF, but I would never recommend it for anyone else. And it wasn't right, essentially. And as they're going through the process, what happens is it starts with the woman actually taking a ton of hormonal contraception,
right,
which you'd think would be against the mindset. But what's happening is you're trying to create a super ovulation of the body. So normally most women produce one egg, but maybe in the case where you have twins, sometimes either the egg splits into two or two eggs are produced.
Right.
But in most cases, just one egg. Well, what happens is they then put her on contraception, then give her a number of shots and things to put her into a state of super ovulation. So she's producing 10, 20, 30 eggs at once. I'm just going to throw this out there, ladies. This is a huge impact on her body, and it can go south, and it has in some cases. So this woman talks about how there's this one extreme reaction that can take place in these cases. Well, sure enough, lo and behold, she ends up having it. So they get all of the eggs, they extract them from her body. It's very, very wearing and tearing on her body. They then have the husband, to be very clear, masturbate in order to produce the sperm to then inject inside a petri dish, you guys. We are creating life outside of the beautiful self-giving act of human sexuality, the marital act, and we're reducing it to a lab. And what's happening, Chris, is even this woman and her husband look at each other during the process of extracting the eggs, and they're just looking at each other going, this isn't right. This isn't what it should be.
Yeah, right. There's nothing natural about this. Yeah. There's nothing romantic about this. There's nothing bonding about this. Mm-hmm. This is purely a pursuit of an end.
Yeah. Right?
You weren't created for that. I wasn't created for that. You know, we were made for love. We were made to image God, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the marital act is an imaging of the Trinity, right? And when we produce life, and you're taking that, in a sense, it's almost as if you're undoing that image of the Trinity. You're separating the three persons.
Mm-hmm.
It's contrary. And the reality of the human being is we're not just physical, we're spiritual. When you do these acts that are so intimately linked to your spiritual reality, to your soul, there's mm-hmm. a wounding. I mean, ultimately that's what sin is, right? It's a wounding. And to think that you can just do that, you can take what God has made sacred, you can strip it down and put it in a laboratory, you can take the unifying act and completely ununify it, and it's going to have no effect on you. Well, I think it's foolish.
Well, and we're seeing that there are repercussions. When we step away from the marital act and the goodness and the beauty and the self-giving and the pleasure, all of the elements of it, and you take procreation, you take a marriage, you take all of that away. Well, what do we have? Hormonal contraception, the fail-safe, abortion. We have men and women suffering the effects of post-abortion syndrome. We have mothers and fathers who will never know their children. Well, in this case, we're seeing also that there's not only a psychological, emotional impact, but a physical impact. In some 30 cases, women will experience ovarian hyperstimulation. And so what happened is this woman ends up experiencing ovarian hyperstimulation. situation. She was so sick. It got to the point where her desire that went past her husband for a child now turns into, I just desire to live. She ends up so sick. They end up freezing a number of the embryos that they create, and they implant 3 embryos into her womb. Well, 2 of those babies end up coming to live, and they are her beautiful twins that she loves. One of those babies dies, and it's a heartbreaking story because what happens, because of her sickness, basically the cyst around the embryo, around the baby, begins to bleed, and that impacts the health of the baby, and which is why one of those babies died.
Yeah, well, one of the babies who'd been planted died. The rest died, you know, somewhere in a laboratory.
Right. Or they're still frozen.
Right. You know, and again, I understand this desire and this idea that we can just fix everything, right? No one ever has to deal with hardship or getting old or infertility or all these things because we have the technology. But none of that comes without cost, right? There's none of these things that are free. There's none of these things that, you know, that don't have some sort of emotional attachment to it. And IVF is absolutely one of those things. And, you know, it's funny, I haven't seen statistics on it. I wonder, though, what are the statistics for marriage stability when people have gone through these processes? Because there is something very dehumanizing about we just want the baby. And I know for women, there's just this intense pressure when you're dealing with infertility. Like every time a woman's cycle happens, it's just, it's again, it's that heartbreak. It's that letdown. It's this thing where you've now made the focus of your marriage having a baby. Well, that was never supposed to be the focus. It's, you know, marriage spring forth from love, a baby spring forth from love, but it's not like, you know, we've never, as a church, we never get behind this idea that a woman is an infant factory, right? Like that's not it. And it's funny because that's what we get accused of so much as Catholics, right? Well, they just want you pregnant and making babies. It's all about babies, babies, babies. But that's not what it is. Babies come from love. There's always an openness to life. But the marital act is not supposed to be a mechanical process to produce children.
It's not meant to be sterile with gloves and trench coats and masks and severe illness caused by what you did and not by the rare circumstances, right, where people do get sick and have difficulties in pregnancy. And I mean, they happen, but, you know, here we're inducing that sickness upon this woman. And, you know, I look at it too, you know, every day when I open my Facebook page, because I am a dancer, because I teach Pilates, because I am in my mid-20s, there's a little ad that will come up almost every single day offering me a very large amount of money to harvest my eggs.
Wow.
Well, and they target me because they see I'm a dancer, they see I'm fit, and I would be a type of person given those circumstances that they would want. Not only that, they somehow know probably that I have student loans. Well, here's a great way to pay off your student loan. Struggle with student loan? You're a dancer? Here, donate your eggs. Pay off your student loans.
I had no idea that that was so predatory because obviously I'm not getting those ads.
Yeah.
I'm not looking at my profile and be like, that guy, we want his eggs.
Yeah, I mean, well,
you know, this is California. Anyway,
this
jokes.
Is what's happening,
yeah.
though.
No, yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, praise the Lord that I am someone who understands not only the wrongness and morality of this, but I also recognize, you guys, there are people who are suffering under student loan debt right
now. How many women are being victimized and giving away their children?
And I know women who would never say it, who are experiencing this. And guess what? It then causes infertility later. Because if you're going through super ovulation, that may be the last time your body is able to go through that level of impact to ovulate.
Right. Back up a couple steps. So for you to be an egg donor, you have to go through the super ovulation process?
That is one of the ways that they do it. Yes.
Okay.
Either way, if they're going to harvest your eggs, they do not want to harvest just one. So pretty much across the board, if you're going in to have your eggs harvested, you're going through the super ovulation process to produce multiple eggs at once.
Okay. So just to kind of put it in layman's terms, you actually have to throw the eggs, right? They can't get them out of the ovaries. They have to actually have been...
extract the eggs.
Okay. But yes. From where are they extracting them from? From the ovaries?
Yes. They're extracting them from the woman's body.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Eggs. So then they have all of these eggs so that they can do 2 things. One, create human life for infertile or couples who just want this perfect baby, or for experimentation. And that's another area that we're not even talking about yet. We haven't touched on.
Right.
The fact that we're creating embryos and a lot of these babies are not just being frozen, but given up for experimentation. And here's the reality. There have been 0 cases where embryonic stem cell research, whether from aborted children or from in vitro fertilization, creating these embryos, have created any cure for Parkinson's, hasn't created a cure for Alzheimer's. None of it, you guys.
Right. And we've seen so many successes with adult stem cells.
Yes.
And like zero with embryonic stem cells. And yet there's this tremendous push to continue to sacrifice our babies at this altar.
And just to be clear, because I was talking to someone just the other day about this, the umbilical cord is technically adult stem cells. That's from a human person, grown adult, right? That in connected to the baby, that is not embryonic stem cell research. So when people try to say that there's success, that's from adult stem cells, technically, not embryonic. We're going to be talking more about IVF here on Trending. Thanks for being with us. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
You can listen to more of Trending via the podcast on iTunes or the iHeartRadio app, where you can share your favorite episodes. You're listening to Trending with Chris and Timmery, where morality and culture meet, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
We've been talking about this idea that everyone has a right to a child, which is wrong. Not everyone has a right to a child. The child is not an accessory. It's not something that completes your pretty little picture. But we know in our modern context, there are couples who are together that will never be able to have children because they're from the same gender, for instance, like a man and a man or a woman and a woman. And so a clinic in the Ukraine has found the perfect solution to this problem.
Wah, wah.
They're engineering three-parent children. Which I just try to get just, if you're listening out there, just get your head around that. They're in a lab someplace. They're taking a donor egg and then genetic material from, I guess, two fathers, and they're creating something that is just not a naturally occurring thing in any sense of the word, a three-parent child.
And it is sick. It's at the point where if this makes your stomach turn, it should. And if it doesn't, it should, you guys. We are looking at children as commodities to be sought after. We're looking at them as something we can shop for in the grocery store practically, just with a hefty price. So what they're doing is you have a mother and a father who create a new human life. What they do is maybe that couple's struggling for that baby to live to term, right? So before the baby dies, or before they even give the baby a chance to die, I think that's important, they extract the DNA from that baby. Then what they do is they have, say, the father and a surrogate woman, right, or a woman who's donating her eggs, they have her and him now create a new embryo, right? And grant, it's not done through the sexual act. It's done through a petri dish and a donating of eggs and sperm, masturbating to get this sperm. And I keep saying that because it's so sick and twisted. Well, now what they do is they have this second human life. Well, they extract the DNA from that baby as well. And they take the DNA that they extracted the first time from the actual mother and father who want the child, and they input the DNA. So what they're doing is they're extracting and injecting DNA. Again, it's one of those moments where, wow, that's amazing that you can do it. Just because you can, should we do a DNA transplant of embryos?
There's so many questions that are not answered here. You know, what are the long-term effects? You know, what's the effect on the biology long-term? We don't really know. I mean, we're just kind of playing here. I think John Paul II and the gift of theology of the body, you know, such a tremendous gift to the church, really truly exploring that idea of created in the image and likeness of God and chasing out what are the implications of that, right? And really looking at that, just the inherent value and the beauty of the marital act, the beauty of the relationship between the spouses. It's like John, and prophetically, he's writing this at a time that we are literally on the border of chaos, right? He's writing to the church at a time when we're about to be just inundated with this tidal wave of transgenderism or same-sex marriage or now, you know, three-parent children or all these things. And he's saying, he's just speaking in truth. And gosh, if you're out there and you're hearing all this, we talked about this in previous segments, that necessary, what's so necessary to form our worldview, to form a healthy mind. Because this kind of stuff, like if you don't have your head on, if you haven't really looked at what we believe and why we believe it, if you haven't really considered the sacredness of humanity, of yourself, of your children, of your relationship, how that images the Trinity, then this kind of stuff, you're gonna see it and you're not gonna know how to respond to it.
Well, and I look at it too, you know, part of the Christian life is this self-discipline, this self-gift, this growing in who we are, growing in our relationship with God and others, and this tempering of our desires, of our passions, right? Disordered passions, right? The good passions we want to draw forth, but always have them moderated, right? And within the right context. Well, what we're seeing now is that that desire, that passion to have a child comes above all else, and that you should have that no matter what. Well, it used to be, well, I'm not able to have a child, so I grow in closer community to nieces and nephews, or I serve. I know people who have experienced infertility and are running orphanages in impoverished communities because they recognize we couldn't have children, and the church calls us not just to live our lives, you know, enjoying this marital relationship with no kids. It calls us to radical self-gift that we're missing out on not having kids.
You know, it's such a weird place we're in, that there is more of a push to adopt an adult dog that's been abandoned, mm-hmm. than there is to adopt a human child that's been abandoned, right? Like, you hear people saying all the time, like, oh, puppy mills are this great evil and injustice. They're terrible, mm-hmm. right? And yet we're doing people mills, right? We're literally doing people mills, rather than looking like a couple with maybe infertility saying, gosh, there's a child out there. Maybe God has put us in this position because we can be mercy to a child who doesn't have a family, right? Rather than going to a clinic and saying, hey, can you make us a three, like this three parent thing? And it's a child, like, but like, why not just say, I desperately longed for a child of my womb. It wasn't possible. But I know that maybe God's putting me in a position where I can be mercy to a child who needs that. Maybe we're not going to get a baby, but maybe there's a tween or an adolescent who just needs someone to love them. And God gave us the ability to do that, where another couple with six kids doesn't have that opportunity.
I hope that you guys are really hearing what we're saying here, because, man, Chris, I look at this conversation, and I have to tell you, when we've covered in vitro fertilization on the show before, I have to tell you, I have lost friendships over it. I have had people not talk to me, because for some reason, when it comes to having children, people think that whether it's themselves or others, people have an absolute right to a child. And I have to tell you guys, we need to wake up. I am begging you that Chris and I want you to have children. We want you to have a family, but that doesn't mean that any means justifies that end. Only good means, going about it properly. You know, there's this attitude that we've gotten away from what is proper and right and ordered. We need to come back to that, because guess what, Chris? At the end of the day, this whole conversation is a conversation about justifying eugenics.
Well, yeah. You know, I it's funny, with all the talk of diversity in our culture, we have to understand that there is a strength in diversity. To each are given, you know, gifts, you know, but right. Not always given the same gifts. And, you know, for whatever reason, my wife and I, we have had no problem ever having a child. We've not, you know, we've been very blessed, no miscarriages, none of that. We've had friends who have struggled for years to have a child. Mm-hmm. You know, why? I don't know. I don't know what that answer is. But for some reason, we've conflated equal dignity with equal in everything. The same, right? Equal dignity means the same. And while, you know, because we've got six kids, it doesn't mean we're better than another couple, right? But our life is different, mm-hmm. right? And so if you're in a place of infertility, like, you have the opportunity to adopt a child. I just can't, you know what I mean? I don't think the state would even give me a child if I wanted to adopt a child, right? Because they look at my income and the number of children and the size of our house. They'd be like, no, you can't have the baby.
Or maybe you start that long journey to fostering a child. It can be a long journey. And I know some people who have fostered for a number of years, working and fighting and battling to try and adopt this child. The reason they want to adopt that child is to give that child the best possible circumstance, upbringing, trying to allow it so that not only that child has a mother and a father willing to step in for their mother and father that couldn't, but a mother and a father that is going to teach them to know, love, and serve our Lord.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I just think, you know, again, there's no easy answers. This is all hard, emotional things to deal with. I don't mean there's no easy answers, that there aren't answers. I just mean that the answers sometimes are hard. Mm-hmm. Right. And I love that Chesterton quote. It's not that it was found, it was tried and found wanting. It was found hard and left untried. Right. Mm. And so much of the sexual ethic, so much of the life ethic, so much of the family ethic, it's not that it was found wanting. It's just that we found it hard and we said, no, I just, nope, nope, it's not what I want. It's not what I want. And, you know, go back to the garden. Well, they decided that they wanted to be able to decide what was good and evil, what was right and wrong.
And maybe you're someone who's struggling with infertility right now, and you're saying, okay, I can't do IVF, or maybe you have a friend. Well, what can I do? Well, the church really called back in the 60s for there to be means not only to delay having children through the moderation of self, through chastity, through abstinence for a period of time. But what about people who are struggling with infertility? So NFP is something that helps people struggling with infertility. Maybe your hormones are imbalanced. Maybe there's something going on. Maybe there's a preconceived condition that you have preventing that. I really want to encourage you guys to check out NAPRO Technology. That's NAPRO Technology. You can go to naprotechnology.com or you can check out fertilitycare.org. These are two excellent resources if you or your loved ones are struggling with infertility.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've had friends who have looked into this, who have, A, learned so much about what was going on in their bodies. They just had no idea. It's crazy that we don't educate women about their fertility cycle, right?
Absolutely. And there's so much that can go wrong, even just stress, the way that stress impacts our bodies. I'm not getting pregnant anytime soon. I'm single. However, I do know that there have been periods of time where something was going on, whether stress, even over or under exercise, can lead to the inability to ovulate, for example.
Well, we hope you've enjoyed the discussion. You know, the reality is that some of these answers are hard, but the truth is good for us. So we'll see you guys next time on Trending.
This has been Trending with Chris and Timmery. To learn more about Chris Mueller or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak at your upcoming event, visit everydaycatholic.com or timmery.com.